Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems, is a compilation of poems by our guest, Beverly Manley. Her pieces of lyric poetry delve into expressions of love, resiliency, and pure joy. Her skills and creativity also allow her readers to be in a playful yet poignant world where they get a glimpse of Beverly's point of view. Her skill with the written word pulls you in and holds you until the very end. Beverly lives in the small desert town of Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. A childhood rooted in the Great Depression and the Jim Crow South could have defined and held her, but instead she chose love, light, adventure, and freedom. Her wanderlust led her to San Francisco during the 1960s, where her true spirit was finally embraced. Deciding on a career in accounting, her off hours were filled with music, art, and museums. Buddhism continues to ground her spiritually, and she has a deep passion for the plight of indigenous peoples. She has written a couple of books on poetry, the second one in collaboration with Mark Matusik, the internationally best-selling author of When You're Falling, Dive and The Boy He Left Behind. He served as her editor. And Beverly Manley, author of Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems, recently featured at the Frankfurt Book Fair, the world's largest book trade fair, is our guest on This Week in America. Beverly, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us today.
Well, I'm thrilled to have the chance to talk to you, Rick.
I love what you've done in the book of poetry, Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems. Looking forward to our conversation. Let's go back to the beginning, where this started for you. Was there anything in your childhood that influenced you writing poetry? You do it so well. What in your childhood got you interested in poetry?
Yes, Mama and her German father, who immigrated here as a grown man. He designed and built the three-bedroom house we lived in. And his artistic nature extended to song and to storytelling as well. I loved it when he lifted me to his lap to tell me stories with a poetic flair. He captivated me with his true story of getting lost in the Black Forest and barely making it out. And my imagination was fired by tales of magical things, like the Lorelei singing on her rock. He sang German songs, and to me the German tongue sounded soft and sweet, and not guttural like my family thought. He yodeled, and it was like silver bells. When done, he'd tell me to always remember that his yodeling was Bavarian and not Austrian. Tears would fill his eyes. Sadly, he died when I was 5. Mama was wonderful. Almost every day she would stop her housework to cuddle with me on the couch and read me stories and nursing rhymes. When I was 3, she started reading me serious poems, and she had the patience to help me memorize any poem I wanted. One Christmas, I memorized The Night Before Christmas for the family party. Tragically, she died suddenly when I was 7. And 1 year after Mama's death, things got unbelievably bad.
Such a fascinating past that you had and the influence of your mother and your grandfather. And then you talk about what happened bad in your life. Talk about that. What do you mean? What happened?
Exactly 1 year after Mama died in 1943, Daddy married a woman who had held the torch for him ever since high school. Brazenly, she wrote him a letter proposing marriage just 1 month after Mama died. He accepted and kept it secret from my sister and me. I want to tell you the story of my 10 years from 9 to 19 with my stepmother, who I'll call Livia, because she compared herself to the murderous Livia in ancient Rome. I want to show samples of the types of abuse Olivia dished out during my youth. So, my first 9 years planted the seeds of poetry and music deep within me. But those 10 years of fighting for sanity and life itself, even for the will to live, gave me the strong will that I have now, my fortitude, my fierce love of life, my joy. I'm not sure how to order these sketches. Maybe I should start with telling you the basic reason for all her hatred. She did not tell me till I was 15. Man, those 7 years of abuse would have been easier to bear had she told. Livia went into a frothing at the mouth rage because I put so much heart into sweeping leaves on a windy day. She was screaming, "You're too damn independent." First time I heard her swear. When she calmed, she explained that she loved her mother so much that she did not know what to think about anything until she knew what her mother thought. Livia said that she lived through her mother so completely that it was hard for her to breathe when her mother was not in the room. This was the way she had always wanted me to love her. Now I understood how opposite we were. I was much more than a thorn in her side. Even at the age of 4, I had had a mind of my own. I wanted to be good because I myself valued goodness. I wanted to excel and to be obedient. I was not in the least bit a rebel. She wanted me at least to be a rebel, because that would be a reaction against her. She would still be the cause of my actions and therefore my center. Instead, I was my own center. I was something she wanted to erase from this earth. I guess the next thing to do would be to give sketches of various ways she abused me. You know, just give you a taste.
Okay.
1 year after she married Daddy and my big sister was off to college, she arranged 2 kitchen chairs to face each other, just as leaders of group therapy were to do in the 1960s, only this was just 44. To me, this made her pronouncement seem more official. She told me that she hated me and intended to throw my body down the unused well in the basement, where she had thrown someone she had killed earlier. And if she could not succeed in that, she would break my spirit and drive me insane. She worked hard on that till I went to college in Iowa when I was 19. Rick, I tell you, she played tricks to make me believe I could not see what was right in front of me. When we were in the living room, she'd say, "Go bring me your slippers." I'd go to where I kept them, and they'd be gone. I'd come back empty. She'd say, "You stay here, and I'll go get them." She'd return with them. One day, I was down on my knees, dusting the springs under my mattress. My slippers were tucked up into the springs. I shivered with the understanding of what extremes she was going to make me doubt my sanity. She'd make me dress like I was in my 40s. I wasn't allowed to date, was denied normal activities with kids my age, was punished for making A's. This deranged woman said I made them just to hurt her because I knew she had never made more than a C in her life. I tried to explain to her that I didn't know until just now when she told me that she had only made C's. She got even more angry, saying I was arguing with authority. She humiliated me every chance she got. Like when on the bus to Kansas City, she would not let me sit when anyone was standing, even someone my age or younger. She'd inform me loud and clear that I was such a worthless person that anyone took precedence over me. And some horrified mothers fought back. It was all so embarrassing. Livia was so authoritarian that I had to stand at attention when she spoke my name, and I had to ask for permission to go to school. She had made it sure early on that I knew I couldn't seek outside help. Livia told me, "Don't go to the church for help, because I'll smile ever so sweetly and tell them that you are just a child who could not accept a stepmother. And they would believe me and not you, because I've been an upstanding member of the congregation for years. I promise you, Miss Smarty Pants, that I would punish you more horribly than anything you can imagine." This totally terrorized me out of seeking help, because Livia and her mother together had a way of physically torturing me that was demented, extremely painful, and was probably damaging my body permanently. You're probably wondering where Daddy was during all this. He just folded. He was afraid of her. I lost my hero. I was alone. And I hope you can't even imagine what that kind of alone feels like, Rick.
What a frightening story. Our guest on the program is Beverly Manley. She is the author of Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems, book available, Amazon, link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. During this period, Beverly, how did you survive? How did you get through that pain?
First, I clung to what I had discovered in the most powerful spiritual experience of my life. It happened the spring I was 7. We don't have time for me to describe the experience, but the takeaway is that I knew that joy was the purpose for living, and not all those rules the churches gave us. When my parents went shopping, I would express the cosmic joy in my center by putting on classical music and pretending to dance ballet. I leapt and twirled and pointed the toe to the heavens. Music spoke to me, and for me, especially Beethoven. It made life worth living. Then, from the poem Invictus, I took "My head is bloody but unbowed" to be my mantra. I kept a picture of the way I was clinging to life in my head. I was clinging to the white cliffs of Dover with a shallow handhold and the wave dashing against me, almost washing me off, but never succeeding.
Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems, is a compilation of poems by Beverly Manley, our guest on This Week in America. Her pieces of lyric poetry delve into expressions of love, resiliency, as you've heard about, and pure joy. During this period, did you write poetry? Was that one of the ways that you were able to get through this period?
I wrote nothing that lasted. Poems of rage and loathing got quickly burned. I counted that to be life insurance. At age 13, I wrote one poem of unrequited love that I didn't burn, and I've written quite a few since.
When did you consider yourself to be a poet? When did you realize, I enjoy doing this, I seem to be good at this, people enjoy reading these? When did you consider yourself a poet?
Not until 2013. Mark Matusik, the internationally best-selling author,
yes,
gave a workshop entitled Finding Your Genius. He discovered that I was a writer and poet. Believing him, I took the poems I'd been writing over 6 decades seriously and treasure hunted for them in journals and diaries, the object being to bring them together in one book. And I'd send them to Mark in New York from my home in New Mexico. If a poem didn't pass muster, I wrote till it did, or that poem didn't go into the book. We were doing this in a relaxed, unhurried way when I fell in love with a man half my age who doesn't know how I feel. Then I was consumed with a passion to put my book into his hands. Work sped up, and Seasons of the Soul was born in the spring of 2023.
And Seasons of the Soul by Beverly Manley, that's Manley, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. You'll link on directly to Beverly's Amazon page by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Beverly, what inspires you to write poems?
I have a passion for using words to paint pictures and to create moods. I love to elicit emotions or share insights or spiritual experiences. I like to reveal the beauty in simple things, like two lovers sharing one umbrella in a soft rain night. It seems they have the world to themselves. And maybe most of all, I hope to trigger memories of precious experiences in my readers. And lyric poetry does this best.
It really does. And you have a talent for the use of words. Just in telling stories during the course of this interview, you paint a picture. I can see you exactly as you're going through your life, and that comes out in your poetry as well, your use of words and expressions. Beverly Manley, our guest on the program. Many poets speak of having a muse. Do you experience anything like that?
It seems to be a very personal thing. When our poetry group here in Truth or Consequences discusses the muse, it becomes clear that each one of us experiences something quite different. Now, for me, music helps me find what I want to say and lends me the cadence and flow with which to say it. Then there's romantic love. It sings in my soul, and I write that song. It gives me two ways to put words together that will express my newborn feelings.
Beverly Manley is the author of Seasons of the Soul, 38 lyric poems. Do these poems come to you quickly when you get an idea? Does it flow, or are there times when you have to put it aside for a while and think it through and go back and finish it?
They usually come within one day, especially a passionately felt love poem. But some take years, and I do mean like more than 10 even. It seems strange, but as soon as I put pen to paper to work on that old poem, the mood I was in returns. I think that may show that a poem holds a time and place within it. A work of art seems to create a mysterious, almost tangible form of reality.
And you make that come alive in your poetry. We are there with you during your experiences. We think of our lives, and it's so relatable in situations you go through, in thoughts and feelings. It's so well done. Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems by Beverly Manley. A couple minutes left in the program. I'd like to talk about the process of writing the poetry. You mentioned writing it down. Do you use like the legal pad and write things down? Do you use a computer? How do you go about actually putting it together and saving the poem?
I can't create through anything more mechanical than a pen or a pencil.
I can relate, yes.
During the day, as I do other things, I can struggle to get a perfect first sentence for a poem, and nothing works. But as soon as the pen touches paper, it's as if that first sentence flowed out with the ink. I actually need the feel of writing to help me think.
It's interesting, and it works so well for you. We've got a minute or so left. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to add on your career, what's developed your sense of poetry, and the book Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems? Anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
Yes, I surely would. I'd like to remind us of the importance of beauty in our lives. I've heard some scientists say that with absolutely no beauty in a person's life, that person would die. I think that there's too little respect in today's art world for beautiful works of art. It's considered old school. The reasoning goes something like this. The world is full of ugliness, and art should reflect that ugliness. To some extent, yeah, I can see that. But the world has always been full of ugliness, and beauty was cherished, even before the Greeks. I want to see beauty come back into its rightful place.
Well, you are doing that with your book. It's been such a pleasure, Beverly, to have you on the program. The book is Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems by Beverly Manley, M-A-N-L-E-Y. I'd like to thank Reader's Magnet Self-Publishing and Marketing Company for arranging our conversation with Beverly on the program today. Her book's available at Amazon.com, wherever books are sold, and, of course, a direct link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Beverly, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Congratulations on a book well done that is touching so many people. Rave reviews, not only in the United States, but nationally as well, internationally as well, talking about the Frankfurt Book Fair, where it was a huge success there. Thank you for spending time with us on the program.
Rick, thank you.
You're welcome. Beverly Manley. Yes, go ahead.
I love the way you showed understanding. Thank you.
Well, I love the poetry. It's very easy when I've got something to work with, like a talented writer like you and a book like Seasons of the Soul, 38 Lyric Poems. And again, go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, click on directly, or Google it, go to Amazon. Beverly Manley, the book's available there and wherever books are sold. You're listening to This Week in America, and we are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.